another episode of Monster in a Glass, the podcast where we do history through cocktails, not just history of cocktails. Now, we're going to do a cocktail that is just two descriptive words put together. Two descriptive words. That's it.
Put them in a buzzle like Yahtzee and figure it out. Right.
Not named after anyone.
No, there's no place name. There's no person name. There's nothing. It's something we can all relate to. This is the delicious sour. We all like things that are delicious, and we all have had things that are sour. There's the history. We're done. Thank you, everyone.
You know, you would think, like, you gotta imagine, though, you make enough cocktails, you're just naming that shit. You're like, it's delicious. It's a little bit sour. There you go.
Shut what else do you fucking me. Need? Yeah. Drink it. Drunko.
I'm joined here by Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hello.
And Professor Mick, the Bone Doctor Layman.
I profess.
And he bones. So, the delicious sour.
Who doesn't like things just described for that? Like, you know, when you name these cocktails, like...
Well, like, delicious isn't even, like, something you can...
But you know you want to drink it if it's delicious, right? If it's called the Tom... if it's the Tom Collins, you're like...
Really?
Well, what's in it?
Yes.
Is Tom in it?
You need to know more, basically.
Right, yeah.
This delicious tells you, sour, you're in.
You're like, good, I'm done.
In.
Make it. It's delicious, right?
I
it's
agree.
A little bit sour. I like the little bit.
It's sour. Yeah. Even if you don't like it, that it's sour, at least it's delicious. You know that it's the kind of sour that's delicious.
It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right.
We'll pull through.
Yeah. So the delicious sour. The ingredients are, and this comes from William, the only William Schmidt's book, The Flowing Bowl, 1892. And it is made with juice of a lime, squirt of seltzer, spoonful of sugar, half of applejack. Well, yeah, we'll stop with the applejack because we're going to have some. I like applejack.
You've had applejack before?
I have had applejack before, and it's delicious. It's delicious and warm.
Oh, sorry, hold on.
Okay.
Oh, that smells good.
Salute.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not very apple-y. Oh, no, there you go. There it comes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got the apple you after
the
you
apple
said it
flavor.
Wasn't? Yeah. That's what you have to do. You have to profess against it.
You're like, no apple!
Oh, wait!
It's like an apple fell off the tree afterwards.
No, bam. It does. But it's not... I want the Jolly Rancher apple flavor thing.
Right. Really apple-y.
Yeah, this is straight out of the colonies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know the story of Johnny Appleseed, right? Johnny Appleseed went all over the colonies, went all over the New World, planting...
Spreading a seed.
Yes.
Or
planting apple seeds all over to grow apple trees, and made delicious apples all over America. Unfortunately, what I've heard is that back then, apples were nasty. They were hard, sour, and gross, and not really something that you could eat off the tree. They're not the kind of apples that we know.
I'm sorry, I'm past. I'm in double entendre land. I can't stop. Sorry. The valley was delicious and sour. And Johnny was everywhere. You needed him to be.
They were hard.
So, apples were made into booze.
Mm.
That's how you made it.
Because you couldn't eat them, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And the water was terrible? Like Flint, Michigan?
They had water, but...
Mint Flint
they
Michigan.
Hated drinking it.
Yeah,
we were like, this
point?
Isn't boozy.
Right. Where's the booze Mint in this Michigan. Water?
That sounds like...
American. They're drinking...
That sounds like Appalachians.
Like a mountain stream.
Why
they're drinking, they're like,
boozy?
Where's the booze? I don't taste any booze in this water.
So, oh,
God
now,
damn America.
And, okay, Applejack
God
is...
God bless America.
It's distilled, but it's freeze distilled.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it only can be made in places where, when it's winter...
It gets cold.
It gets really cold.
Alaska should be making a lot
right.
of Applejack.
They should be, yeah. I have heard a story that they used to pay road workers in the colonies in Applejack. I asked a friend of mine, who I know through Twitter, she's a booze historian specializing in colonial drinking, and she said, it's possible. Hmm. she wouldn't be surprised, or maybe like their pay was supplemented in Applejack. Yeah. You know.
Well, I mean, if you're working all day and you got a place to sleep.
Right, and if it's cold. It's cold. I mean, if you—that's when you have to make Applejack.
There were some. There are other names for this.
The names are Jersey Lightning, Cider Oil, and Essence of Lockjaw.
It gets you right here.
It gets you right here. Yeah. Right here. In the face.
You know, and it's... Yeah.
It's so deliciously sour.
And it won't kill you. Yeah, so the it was hard cider, basically. It just froze. So what they would do is they...
Distill it down, basically.
They would put it in a barrel, and when it froze on top...
You take the ice off.
They take the ice off, and they leave the fermented concentrate in the barrel.
That's great.
And then, so it goes back to colonial times. And in the middle colonies, in upper southern colonies, temperatures were not cold enough to use freezing method. So Applejack was made by distilling hard cider. And this competed with peach and other types of brandies that they had. But the reason it's called Jersey Lightning is it mostly was associated with New Jersey. They produced a shitload of Applejack. I found an article from the Washington Post in 1905 that was talking about the decline of Applejack, and it claims that the oldest distillery of Applejack was in New York State. And it attributed the decline to more consumption of beer and cheaper liquors and higher whiskey consumption. So it kind of went out of favor, but like just because there was cheaper shit to get. And you talked about Johnny Appleseed. That was one of the things that I find.
So that was really a commercial for Applejack?
For Applejack's.
Johnny Appleseed. Drink it. Right? What was the hams jingle?
In the land of clear blue waters.
That's right.
Once I get that song in my head, can never get it out.
For a week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the weirdest commercial
that
ever.
That bear was frolicking.
There's also frolicking. Like the hairiest men ever in the forest with flannel shirts on, and they're like drinking hams.
Yeah.
But then there's some weird cartoon that comes out.
What the
out.
Fuck is hams?
It's part of it's from the something? Land of clear blue water. Yeah, is that Minnesota?
Yeah.
What's the land of a thousand lakes? Is that Minnesota?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's erotic.
Watch the commercial. It's pretty erotic.
I'm telling you, it is.
So, yeah, it was replacing brandy. But peach brandy is one of the ingredients of this, too, which makes it an ultra-warm drink, I gotta imagine.
It's like a wintry thing.
Yeah, you just are not drinking this. So we're going to try some peach brandy.
It's winter here in Chicago.
That is delicious.
Yes, agreed.
I like it. Who would have known? I feel very warm. I feel very warm right now.
I feel delicious.
You look delicious.
I really do. Wow.
It's all the peach brandy.
Beard and all. So good.
One of the things that happened during Prohibition, bootleg Jersey Applejack was actually really popular. Because it was safer to drink than moonshine. It was like...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, it wasn't being made in, you know,
metal
tubs.
Yeah.
So they just put cider in a barrel and then froze it, basically?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I'll go with that. I probably won't go blind.
I've heard that that's one of the earliest forms of distilling that was discovered. Mm-hmm. The people in China were doing that with wine and, you know, distilling down a harder spirit by pulling all the water out of the wine. Yeah, it's just one of those things that just happens.
Yeah.
A lot of those.
And then you discover, you drink it, you're like, man, this is good.
Whoa,
I'm way, way fucked up now.
Isn't that kind of what top ferment is? Lagers? Like what makes a lager a lager? Because they would lodge it in the caves and it was cold?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
We'll have to explore
it's the difference
that.
Between lager and ale. I don't know. I looked it up once.
That's
holy
awesome.
Shit.
Okay.
I don't know. I made it up once.
I fucking made that up, suckers. No, I think so. Lager means lodger, to put in like a cold space, and it top ferments.
Oh.
Huh. Mm. Interesting. So yeah, I mean, that's it. That's what makes it delicious. Oh, there's egg white in it. So
you fuck can, that shit.
Yeah.
No, as long as it doesn't have the yolk, I'm cool.
No, I never saw a drink that they actually...
Oh yeah, the coffee cocktail.
Oh, that's yolk? Right. Yeah.
Straight
oh,
up
yeah,
yolk?
Yeah.
The whole egg.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, gross.
I'm sorry, yolk and booze, pass.
Yeah. I don't want to puke
yolk
while
and
I'm,
booze.
I don't want to puke while I'm drinking.
Hey, everybody. Yeah. My name's Yolk and Booze. Here's some accordion.
Word.
I need some more Applejack. Actually, the peach brandy was really good.
In the land of clear.
I know, water. Right? It's in your head.
It'll be in my head for the next
okay.
week.
Okay.
Thank you. You can thank me.
So, It's a pretty simple drink, and it really does, it seems like it comes from William, the only William Schmidt. This guy was kind of a character. I mean, if you couldn't guess by him giving himself the nickname, the
only William. So he gave William, himself that name?
That's my understanding, is that he called himself the only William, which you would think he would be like, I'm the only Schmidt. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Well, maybe he was the only William.
In the world? Yeah, probably.
Well, maybe he was the only William.
Was doing drinks and
were
stuff.
There any other William bartenders? It seems
there
like
have to. Yeah, that would be weird if there was.
Like, maybe that's why.
If your name is William, you can't be a bartender. Maybe that's we've already got
the way
one.
He named himself that. Because it was so strange that he was the only one.
It's very smart, actually. Good branding. Good branding, you only William.
They were like, are you the only William? He's like, yeah, I am the only William.
Maybe there were lots of bills.
Yeah.
Everybody's a Bill.
Well, you know what? That would make sense because Bill to me seems like an American thing. So he was from Germany.
Bill Smith, right?
He was from Hamburg. So maybe he was like, no, I'm William, not Bill. He emigrated to Chicago in 1869.
Chicago, not New York.
Wow.
He started out in Chicago, 1869, so right before the fire. He got a reputation for his bartending skills, and he claimed he mastered them in Germany, not America. This was kind of a big thing for him because everybody was saying, well, Americans are the best bartenders. They're the best cocktail makers. And he was like, "Nah." I learned this my craft in Germany, and there's plenty of good bartenders in Germany. There's plenty of good bartenders in Europe. So that was a thing for him. After the fire in 1871, he headed up a team of 16 bartenders at a place called the Tivoli Gardens in Chicago in 1873. It's hard to find anything about this place. It seemed like it was built and then kind of faded out.
And then started on fire.
It was at Clark and Washington. So right in the loop, right in where the current loop is.
Okay.
The information I could find, it was owned by a man named D.L. Bemis, who had a brewing company there. And it sounds like they had a beer garden. It could have been a concert saloon, so they probably had music and other entertainment, vaudeville stuff. But in the location that was, the neighbors in the area hated it. They said it was too noisy, so they kind of did everything they could to chase it out. And it went out of business. I don't think the building's there anymore. There was also a theater called the Tivoli in Chicago, a famous movie theater. I looked up as much as I could. There was really nothing on it. But it didn't really last long, and after it kind of faded out, and I think they lost their liquor license and stuff, he ended up moving to New York in 1884. So he tended bar at a bunch of places, and then in 1905... he died. I know that I'm skipping like 20 years of his life. He worked
1905.
At 1905. Wow. So he was 50 something years old.
But so he was in New York right when the cocktail stuff really hit.
Right, and he wrote two books. He had The Flowing Bowl, and then there was one.
That's just so unfortunate because it's like a toilet.
I tell you.
I mean,
yeah.
If well, only he knew back
they
then.
They didn't have toilets, yeah, so it was totally different. Turn of phrase.
The full title is The Flowing Bowl, When and What to Drink, Full Instructions How to Prepare, Mix and Serve Beverages. Yeah, but it does...
Full is way better than partial.
Yeah, right. When you go The Flowing Bowl, you're like, dude, what?
What's
I mix it with
what's
all the
flowing in it?
Is this my lady? Or, whoa. Is this what... Did he develop this in Chicago or was it...
New York? Was in New York. Mm. There was a book before it, and I can't. And the name, the title of it is slipping my mind, but
it's because it was massive.
Well,
yeah,
the
four sentences.
It
was
totally.
200 words. The title.
Yeah,
you couldn't even read it.
And the flowing bowl of whatever. The first book was kind of like his. It was his first book, and then
the first bowl, book was just the title.
Yeah, it was like the first shit. My first stab at this bullshit. I don't know. The flowing bowl. Was his second book in 1892. And he compares in the book, in the preface, he compares mixing drinks to working with fractions and decimals. And he says the fractional parts
How
of...
How German.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Very, very precise.
Organize it.
The fractional parts of liquors that are to be mixed and their order have to be carefully considered, and without such consideration, no palatable drinks may be expected. So he was like very specific. And when you start looking at the recipes... You kind of get it. You're like, yeah. I mean, he was very into, like, it has to be this. And within the preface, too, it sounded like he was someone who was kind of against the stigma of drinking, and he was possibly into temperance, which I was like, that doesn't make any sense. You have a cocktail book, you idiot. But what he says is, while saying that a cocktail book will most likely be used by public resorts, his hope is that there will be a time when reasonable drinking is not looked upon as a crime. So he was anti-prohibition. But then he goes out of saying that it should bring families together, while the sparkling bowl sharpens their wit and loosens their tongue. Again, the bowl part is really just not working.
He's just using that. That's a glass.
Yeah.
It's
right. Yeah. Rather than leaving home, so his point was, he thought that rather than people leaving home and going to taverns, that people should stay home and be with their families and use alcohol as a way to create this rapport and
tell
stories.
Yeah.
And thus, he's writing a book so people can do it at home.
Kind of. He says, like, I know this is only going to be really used by hotels and whatever, but I hope that people will do this at home.
It's like an idealist, really.
Yeah, but then in the next paragraph, he says that he believes in temperance. But in the word's true meaning, tempering or moderating the enjoyment of liquors, but not as it pertains to prohibition. He specified that. Mm. He said, a habitual drinker will never indulge in beverages artistically mixed. He lacks the taste of them, as they do not bring him rapidly enough to his desired nirvana. So he was opposed to excessive drinking, but it was for social reasons that, you know, a lot of people at the time were. It wasn't like that they really opposed drinking. It was like, it makes poor people do stuff, and we don't like that. But we can drink. That's fine. We can maintain.
Yeah. We appreciate it.
Was like he thought drinking and cocktails were like a work of art, that this was an artistic endeavor. One of the reviews of his book, The Flowing Bowl, is this is the worst. You need never to go thirsty again if you have the flowing bowl on your table. And I'm like, oh. So, you know, it's whoever's reading it says, everybody who can read has heard of William Schmidt. Almost every man who drinks knows him. And now the only William, as he modestly, I think that maybe this is where I got it, as he modestly styles himself on the title page, has put most of his wonderful knowledge into a book, The Flowing Bowl. You would not think that a man who has been a barkeeper for 30 years, so he's been at it at this point, 1892, for a long time, as long as Jerry Thomas, at least, would know much about Quintus Horatius Flaccus, about the banquets of the ancient Greeks and Romans, about Pliny, Seneca, Sophocles, and, help me out here, Aeschylus?
Oh,
I can never pronounce it.
That's a tough one.
Aeschylus.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I did it right. All right. All of which are worthy. He quotes in the original, but you don't know the only William. I started reading, I was like, really? He was talking about Pliny and Sophocles? And
he drank a lot.
I was like, why are you putting that in
really
your cocktail?
He really appreciated that shit.
But people talk about like how it was comprehensive, and he did some amazing things in these books. There was other reviews, and he has a chapter on ethnography, quotes appropriate literature, English, German, and Latin, Ford's receipts of 519 beverages, including the cold and the Russian bishop.
So he's like...
He's
like
very worldly.
The
worldly.
Easter crocus. And,
or perhaps like Pythagoras reincarnated.
What was it that they gave him such specialties and subtleties as the Queen of Sheba, the Hannibal Hamlin, the Broker's Thought, the Easter crocus, the Alabazam,
wow,
the Sitting Bull Fizz, and the Weeper's Joy. It's like he was just making drinks, like, just to make drinks.
Well,
kind of like the Cafe Royal cocktail book. He's like, we're just going to make as many as we can.
Perhaps he knew some New Thought folks, though.
So I looked up, like, all his shit on the Greek and Roman banquet. I was like, is that in there, really? And he does, like, provide a good deal of history on Greek and Roman banquets, physiology and diet, the composition of water, wine, and beer, liquors.
You know about the New Thought guys at this point in history, right?
He was like he was doing some historical
those
shit.
Those dudes were heavy.
And then there's a chapter where he is talking about ethnography, and it's like, it's a brief chapter, and he's looking at Asian, Caribbean, African, and even Inuit cultures, mm-hmm. and talks about sort of like what they drink and like how it relates
to Inuit.
No shit. Well, I mean, he was calling them Eskimos, but it was...
Still, it's like...
Right. How the fuck... Yeah, like, wow. I was like, that's weird.
And they don't eat anything but fat.
Fat, yeah.
But they were making fat cocktails. Okay. Whale fat cocktails.
P-H-A-T. Cocktails.
So he talks about what kind of foods they eat in relation to their climates and their cultures. And I was like, oh, It's like, wow, he is actually did research. It wasn't typical. When you think of the 1800s and they're talking about other cultures, they're like, I mean, you know how it was like, yeah. You know, Africans are inferior because they're black. That was essentially the over.
What's
like,
the time frame, though? Because there's some really weird stuff going on in Chicago.
In 1892?
Well, like 90s through like 10s, 20-ish. Like the New Thoughts were weirdos.
You know what I'm talking about? Well, he was already in New York at this point. Not to say that, that he, mean it, yeah, I mean, didn't he might have been
him there.
Yeah, I mean,
they were freaky deaky. Like, what's there was the German woman. I'm drawing a blank on her name. There was they were into the Crowley stuff. Like, everybody was really into some weird stuff.
Huh.
Back in the day, yeah, Chicago was really like a center of new thought. And I mean,
and this could be like in. That was kind of my first thinking too. Was that. I was kind of impressed at the knowledge he was putting, because it was, when you read stuff from this time, everybody was super, super racist, and I was like, oh, and then, you know, he was even talking about, you know, cultures in Africa and what they drink, and then, but then he says, between the Senegal and Niger, everything is concentrated upon the enjoyment of alcoholic drinks. The Negro, fond of drinks, may it be wine, beer, or alcohol, is willing to acknowledge the supremacy of the European, and I was like, oh, he went there, didn't he?
Yeah.
And is an enemy of Mohammedism. But he was talking about that there were Christian Africans, and then there was the Muslim Africans, yeah. And there was conflict. There was a lot of stuff, but that was, in that one sentence, I was like, you're still...
you're still that guy.
You're still the guy of the period who was like, yeah, you fucked it up. Yeah, no, they're great. They're wonderful. They have their own culture. It's amazing. But... they still acknowledge the superiority of the Europeans.
Right, right.
Why'd you go there?
Right.
So one of the things that I kept seeing about him, if you scour the interwebs, is people call him the godfather of mixology. And I heard this before. I thought, you know, why? Why would you call it? You know, out of all of these people, you know, Jerry Thomas, Harry Johnson, why is he the godfather of mixology? People say, though, he was even more famous in his lifetime than Jerry Thomas and Harry Johnson were. That sort of Harry, really? Jerry Thomas and Harry Johnson are famous more now than they were in their lifetimes. You know, I thought, well, maybe, you know, if he's mixing, you know, when my interpretation of mixology nowadays, it's a, you know, you're mixing up all kinds of crazy shit. You're putting things together that normally wouldn't go together, and you're making them taste good. And I started looking through, and I didn't see any ingredients that were truly bizarre. I mean, he uses a lot of wines. He uses absinthe a lot. There were some ingredients that show up in contemporary cocktails, like things that you think of like cucumber or mint. He uses that. So I was like, oh, maybe that's why they kind of call him.
His cocktails were also massive, like 20 ingredients.
A lot of them were, and precise. So back to that fraction thing and the decimals, he was very precise about it.
It's like an elixir. It's like a beyond cocktail.
I know. You know, and sort of it, some of the mixology stuff too is about showmanship and... Mm-hmm. There was a book called The Spirituous Journey, A History of Drink, Book 2 by Jared Brown and Anastasia Miller. It's from 2010. And some of the quotes that pulled from the book, he was renowned for his acrobatic bartending feats, throwing flaming and non-flaming drinks in graceful arcs. He was even better known for his ability to create drinks that would even convert people who swore they liked nothing stronger than lemonade. William was renowned for creating new drinks, and at one point he was estimated to have invented a new one daily. He even created a $5 cocktail at a time when drink prices hovered around 15 cents. They said, sadly, that recipe's lost. He had an encyclopedic knowledge of the classics, and he preferred talking with his customers and inventing cocktails based on their moods and their preferences.
It's almost like an idiot savant.
I know, right?
Wow, that's fantastic.
And it said...
liquor speaker. The liquor whisperer.
Yeah, the liquor whisperer.
The rummy whisperer.
Spelled the Wikipedia way or whatever it was. L-I-K.
Liquors.
Liquor whisperer.
Despite packing hundreds and hundreds of recipes into his books, many of his drinks were never made it into his books. He always claimed, he's like, I made well over 1,000 drinks, so a lot of them never made it. He just kind of made them on the spot and never wrote them down.
It's like an improv for him.
Exactly. I mean, that was kind of, people would come in and you go talk to him and then go, well, here's your drink.
Yeah.
And so
he's a fucking wizard.
He was.
Holy shit. This guy's awesome. This is the real William?
This is the only one.
Thank you.
Not even the real one. Just the old
one. Only.
But you were talking about, like, he puts in a shitload of ingredients in his drinks, and there was one called Le Bon Boire, or the good drink, and it has, he measures it by the tenth of the ingredients. So 1/10 maraschino, 1/10 anisette, 1/10 creme de roses, 1/10 creme de vanilla, 1/10 parfait amour, 1/10 creme de the tea. it sounds like tea. Celestine creme de coco, fine old brandy Benedictine, all these 1/10. And serve in fancy glasses. Or the claret cup that has maraschino, curacao, Benedictine, chartreuse, six limes, claret, Rhine wine, apollinaris, sugar, cucumber, pineapple, sprigs of mint. It's just, he just was throwing everything in there.
This is for sure to give you a boner for like 4 hours.
I know, right?
For sure.
Yeah. I don't know what's in it, but whatever it is. And he has one called Le Fin du Cycle, which is the end of the century. And he calls it William's Pride. And this one has...
Yeah, Viagra.
The boner.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what it boils down to.
This is
cocktails for rich people to get boners.
Right. Orange, lemon, sugar, egg, brandy, Benedictine, maraschino, curacao, anisette, parfait amour, noia, pure cream. It is like... And to give you an idea of like skimming through his book is hilarious because you see all the classics, you see Tom Collins, you see all this stuff, but then you see these names and you're like, wait, what's that?
Yeah,
the brain duster, egg beer. I'll give you one guess. What's in egg beer?
Chicken fart.
Distill the fart of the chicken.
Egg and beer. Egg and beer. Oh, that is the drink. I'm like, is that really a cocktail? Or did you just throw an egg in a beer?
Nasty.
The Paymaster. Anticipation. The Nap. I was like...
Take the foam of a horse.
Absinthe. Whiskey. Rum. Gin. That's the Nap.
And it will drive your horseless carriage around town.
The Correspondent. And a Sure Relief.
Wow.
So the delicious sour wasn't the end or the beginning. Mm-mm. It was many. It was
the most lame.
Right.
Drink. It was just lame.
Right.
Of all of them.
If I was a bartender and I was flipping through and going, okay, I want to make a drink. And I want to. It's like delicious sour. Paymaster. What's this all about?
Yeah, fuck it. Yeah. Hell
egg
yeah.
Egg beer.
I can tell this rich definitely needs a boner.
What?
I kept thinking, I bet we could come up with a ton of them, like, all day long. Yeah, sure, that was the William Schmidt of the SB. The Pope scrotum.
The papal roll.
Just start talking, you could even do, you know, all those nasty sexual positions that they were having.
I mean, it never ends.
I'm sure there's a Dirty Sanchez in his book.
If he's cerebral like that, and like, you know, the idiot savant, he was probably just fucking with
What's it called?
Yeah.
I don't know. Pope scrotum.
Yeah, he's in New York, and he's just like, what you need to get her off, you know? The Aphrodite's hardness, you know? Like, oh my god.
To give you an idea of like how he could be considered the godfather of mixology, there is actually quite a few newspaper articles about this guy just making up shit on the fly. Like, people would come in and that was my experience the first time I ever went to a bar where there was a mixologist, where I was ordering,
it's a wizard,
you know,
yeah,
beer and whiskey, and they were like, you have to order a cocktail from this guy, like that's what he does. You tell him what you like, and he goes, all right.
Isn't that... The combination of what? Sense of smell and taste?
I don't know.
We are complex. Let's say that, right? I mean, this is developed over time. Somebody play that like a fucking organ is...
It's a lot like being like a chef. I mean, you have to know what ingredients are going to play well with the other ingredients. And
when they play at certain times. It's fascinating.
You know, one article talks about... He was walking down the street and he was like, and he dove into a tavern called the Foghorn Tavern. He's like, give me rye, give me vermouth, now bitters and a dash of brandy. And then he said,
this guy's my fucking hero.
You know, creme de menthe. And he was like, you know, what did he call it? It said, the next morning, the only William was busy painting a new sign card, which he later placed in a conspicuous place. It invited customers to try a Japanese smash or a Baminsky with cocktail. What the hell is wrong with this guy?
He's a genius. Barnum and Bailey of cocktails.
Yeah, right? The stories that when he's featured, it's just always about him like just coming up with this one. But there was this weird one where it said it was conscious money a conscience money from the only William. William Schmidt, the noted mixologist of the Hayward Cabaret in this city, who is better known to newspapers as the only William. So he already has like some celebrity status of some kind. Wow. Has a new addition to his valuable selection of acknowledgments from well-known public men. Recently, he won a prize of $1 from the New York Evening World for writing a clever peewee headline. I had to look this up. It was very strange. I was like, what the hell is a peewee headline? But the best I could figure out from what it was is that it was like a cartoon. In the cartoon, the characters would be holding newspapers, and you had to create some weird headline where some of the words would be very small and some of the words would be very big. Wild. So the big words would form a different sentence than...
Wild.
So he won one, but it was about J.P. Morgan. And after he received the check, he said it was... His conscience troubled him so much that he finally endorsed the valuable little piece of paper and sent it to Mr. Morgan with a note to this effect.
It said, please don't fucking kill me.
Respected sir, being perfectly aware that but for the unauthorized use of your name, I never should have won the prize of $1, which has been awarded to me. I feel that the money actually belongs to you, and it is my pleasure to hand it to you. Mr. Morgan, a few days later, graciously declined to accept the check, and it was returned to William. I was like, it was a fucking dollar! Like, what the hell? J.P. Morgan was like,
that's probably at least 20 bucks, though. It's probably 20 bucks. It's probably 20 bucks. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah. But J.P. Morgan had more than 20 bucks.
Well, just a little bit.
Just a little bit more.
He just didn't want to die.
He was like a weird guy. It was like, he's writing cartoons, and I mean, he didn't create the cartoon, but like the headline. But like, all in all of these things, it does make the only William sound kind of like a mixologist of these days. I mean, he was mixing drinks on the spot to suit the taste of customers. He's mixing like a chemist. He's throwing pretty much everything he could find on his shelf into drinks at just the right proportions. And what was weird is that different from a lot of bartenders of the day, I mean, if you read some of their prefaces, they're very, very particular. You know, they talked about things like, you wear your crisp white shirt, and you focus on tending that bar, and you make sure your customer is satisfied, but there are, you know, you don't throw shit around, you don't set it on fire,
yeah.
You don't hang out and talk. That was important. You do not talk to your clientele. You are polite, and if they engage you in conversation, you are polite, and you answer their questions, but, like, you clean your glasses, you wipe your counter, you keep your mouth shut. And Williams sounds like, no, you talk to them, you find out what they like, and then you make them a drink.
Like two schools of thought, basically.
Yeah, and he was different. And I mean, you could kind of see that he was different than the bartenders of the time.
And you could tell that paid off.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty... I mean, his obituary...
It's like all of these people are saying, don't do all this stuff, and yet the guy who is, is making a killing. And,
Right. And he bounced around, but people knew who he was. His name shows up in a lot of newspaper articles. He died, and he really had no family. He, you know, his family was in Germany, and he had distant relatives. His parents were dead by this time.
The only William, so... I
mean, he was, but he had a lot of friends, apparently. And it says, like, the services, plain and simple, were held at 1:30 p.m. 20 men passed into the rear room of the undertaker's place and looked at the dead. It was done silently. Then the coffin of oak with silver handles was carried to the hearse. Hmm. The only William's epitaph was spoken at the graveside by his friends. A man in my profession should never forget that he's a gentleman. However well mixed the drink is, much of the flavor will be lost unless politeness is added. A true artist should infuse courtesy and quality into all of his liquid pictures. So he really was, wow, he was very big about, like, this was an artistic holistic thing. This was like, not like...
It wasn't... You know, it was not about booze for this guy.
In all the newspaper articles, it was never, you know, where, like, other bartenders, they talked about it. It was like, they invented a drink. And this guy was like, he was hanging out with this guy, and they were chatting, and then he came up with this drink, and he just pulled it out of his ass. And it's like, he was really into it. Like he liked people.
It was almost like a bohemian ethos, you know? Like, he was really into the passion and the whole artistry of what it was.
To yeah, create. I mean, he did to, not consider it like
someone with a spirit or 10.
Yeah, here, try these 9 booze. Yeah. Don't worry, you won't
trust me. You're gonna get a boner.
I guarantee he invented like the Long Island iced tea.
Yeah,
I mean, like the amount. It's like, no, trust me. There are like 14 different kinds of alcohol in it. But it will taste like root beer.
Yeah,
like
that's awesome.
Just, you know, he was that kind of guy. He seems like a pretty cool guy. I mean, where the other bartenders were probably... Jerry Thomas was a little bit of a showman, but like this guy makes him look like a...
One of the first artists, I guess, we've kind of come across, it seems. Yeah. Or somebody who appreciated it in that respect.
He definitely created a lot of drinks.
That's cool.
I mean, by all accounts, you know, people say he created over 1,000 original drinks. I mean, that's...
Didn't write more.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, he was just, like, whipping them out every day. Right. You know, like...
He did it again, whipping it out.
He whipped it out. Yeah.
What are we going to do with him, Mickey?
It's on the table right now. It's really awkward, everyone. Really awkward.
But you're right. I mean, every day he was making a new drink, but by all standards of what you consider a mixologist today, that's what they do.
Yeah.
They don't just sit around and be like, yeah, I'm going to make another Manhattan. They're like, people say, I like this, and I like this. And then they make up a drink, and that's the whole focus. So
they're almost like psychologists.
All bartenders are psychologists.
But then they give you the booze that make you get a boner.
Right.
It's all about boners.
Boner booze.
It's all about boners. Delicious and sour.
So is that the delicious sour story?
That's the delicious sour story.
I mean, it's really the story of the only William.
Yeah, I mean, the drink itself is not... I don't know why it survived. It doesn't really show up anywhere else. He's kind of just...
So it only shows up in his book?
Kind of, yeah.
Nobody else copied it?
I didn't find it really anywhere. But I don't know how you would copy shit from his book. You're like, that's too complicated. Like, yeah. I don't have all those ingredients.
You're like, holy shit. Like,
okay, well, first of all, I need...
milk a yak. Fuck you.
But only one-tenth.
One-tenth of a yak.
Yeah, like, you know, it's like... And I could see how people would see his book as intimidating. You're like, no, I just want to know how to make a Tom Collins. I don't need to know how to make, you know, a nap.
Exactly.
I don't want people to die in the bar. I just want them to. So, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't really show up. I'm surprised it survived. But he's pretty, I mean, if he's as famous as people, and people do call him Godfather of Mixology, you got to figure. I think Haig found it in his book. I mean, he says that's where he got it.
This was Haig's tribute to
him.
Right. I'm surprised he picked this drink out of anything else, because there are some... I saw some things in there with... Man, he used absinthe. He must have had stock in absinthe.
In the company. Yeah.
Because he put absinthe almost in everything. Of course, except a delicious sour. He didn't put absinthe. Of course, there's Applejack and Brandy, so you don't really need absinthe.
Yeah. Very cool. I like it when we put the spotlight on a single bartender. Check out, you know, what they're all about.
We'll have to do a profile on my man crush, PGD.
Yeah.
The Duff.
Just go through all of his chest hair.
How do you know he had chest hair? I feel like he had a handlebar mustache, though. I feel like pictures
of him. Tell me, Jay, your mind's eye with PGD.
Crisp white shirt, handlebar mustache. He's cleaning that glass very thoroughly.
The button hangs slightly open.
He's not talking to me because he's not allowed to.
Not allowed to. But I'm a customer. Of things he can tell you.
He's polishing the bar.
Just enough. Just enough.
I'll have a delicious sour.
Okay.
This got all weird.
There, it got super weird.
So Jay's going to go take a cold shower.
I think we all just had sex with PGD. That was awesome.
We're the only one.
We're going to go.
Yeah.
At the same time, it was like a sauna thing, like Greek shower, you know.
Thank God.
That was super weird. We're going to drink. You can't leave. You have to stay.
The Delicious Sour. 2 ounces. Laird's Applejack, 2 ounces, Paul Masson, peach flavored brandy, the juice of 1 lime, 1 egg white, 1 teaspoon sugar, soda water.
We have arrived here at the Brixton. It's time for the Delicious Sour. I'm here with Rachel Rubin.
Hello.
Rachel, do you like the sour? I know that you like Delicious. Everybody likes Delicious. It's kind of like wisdom. Everybody likes wisdom. Nobody says wisdom sucks.
I like a little sour, but not a lot.
So you don't go for like the screaming sour candy or anything?
No, I don't go for sour candies or anything. But I like citrus.
I mean, that's like the platonic form of sour when it's sour. But Nicole Pizzini is going to object.
I just want to know what non-platonic sour is.
I was thinking of the platonic form of sour, you know, like the sour of sours.
Not like the we're just friends sour.
So, Nicole.
Sorry about you.
Are you friends with sourness?
I'm drinking a sour beer right now.
I've had those. I'm not a huge fan. It's like, ooh, this beer went bad.
I like sour beers. Although I will say I like sour beers that are a little sour much more than I like sour beers that punch you in the face. Well, actually, the face-punching beers are good too, but only if you only have a little.
Yeah, I agree. It's like where it hints at it, and it's... I have a feeling that sour beers were much more common back when beer was young.
Well, a lot of sour beers are caused by lactic acid fermentation, and I think probably you're getting more like wild bacteria and stuff in beer before Industrial Revolution and the knowledge of bacteria.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, like when the beer worked out and it didn't stretch afterwards, the lactic acid would form. Gonna happen. I think the most sour beer I've had was one that came out of Northern Europe, aged in wine barrels.
That sounds awesome, and I want to try it.
Yeah, it was like it had the sour, but then it had the fruitiness too. It's kind of red.
Was it a lambic?
No, it wasn't a lambic. And I couldn't pronounce the name if I had it in front of me. But anyway. We're also here with Kevin Ratajczyk.
Hey.
And you, Kevin. Do you like sour?
I love sour. So I'll eat the sour candy. I like sour cherry candy. I like the sour head kind of thing. I like grapefruit.
Do you like screamingly Tomka, sour?
Tomka soup.
Do you enjoy the sour that like burns? Like so sour?
Almost like bile.
Okay, that's really sour. We're also here with Mr. Eric Martin.
Good morning, Scott. I see you in your cubicle.
Sour?
I love sour. Well, I like tart things, so like lemon cake, lemon bars, lemon parties, that sort of thing.
More all-natural sour? Or do you go to the synthetic where Kevin's over there, like, crying?
I could do both. I like artificial lemon as much as I like natural lemon, so I could go for a nice cleaning solution lemon-flavored custard any day.
It's lemon-scented, not lemon-flavored. What are you going to do?
If you drink enough, you can't tell.
Yeah, it's... So we're sampling like yeah, exactly. So we're sampling like two kinds of Applejack.
Excellent. Both by layers. One aged and one not aged.
Okay. Michael was good enough to pour us some of the ingredients because we're not entirely familiar with Applejack and peach brandy. So we've got two kinds of Applejack, aged and young.
Aged and fresh.
Barely legal.
Barely.
Jack Jr. Squeeze.
This is the peach brandy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it smells good.
When we tried this,
wow.
You're going to hate it, Nicole.
I don't like do peach? Sweet very well.
Yeah, it's good.
The the more it tastes like
peach rings.
Yeah. Well, sour peach rings probably sound good, actually.
I love peach rings. Peach rings take me back to junior high.
The closer you get to Smarties, the less I'm going to like it.
This is delicious.
Peach rings are tied to a very specific memory for me.
It smells like if you mixed powdered sugar with kerosene.
Okay.
It tastes a lot like how I imagine Paula Deen smells.
Oh, Nicole's gonna snarf it.
He's not wrong.
I thought it was under the tastes like grandma. Tastes like grandma liquor. We've talked about this before.
Your grandma you got a taste. She's all over the place.
I have very specific memories of, like, my grandma's, this sounds terrible, like, bathroom, but, like powders and, like, soaps and, like, perfumes and stuff, and this, like, falls into, like, that memory of, like, what her bathroom smelled like.
She had four husbands and a full bar.
at the same time?
Yes.
The grandma smell is sort of a combination of, like, musty and sweet.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're spicy. They're usually spicy.
This is 80 proof, so that's as strong as most whiskeys and vodkas and gins. And then this is, so there's 2 ounces of that in there. And this is only about 50 proof, 52 proof. So still, it's still a very strong drink, no doubt about it. It's one of the strongest drinks I've ever made, no doubt about it.
Wow.
Oddly enough.
That is interesting.
Delicious, sour, and boozy.
Okay, so we've discussed
the
brandy.
Yeah, let's go to
Applejack. Do you remember what was in the middle? Was it the old or the new?
It smells awesome.
Now remember, this is a freeze distilled.
This one's the one fresh squeezed from Jack.
I think so.
So
this is the old one.
This tastes. This has a slight smell of rubbing alcohol.
No, we'll try this one. Sniff that one.
Less rubbing alcoholic.
I think it smells sweeter than the kerosene powder sugar.
It is not.
It doesn't taste sweeter?
No, I'm sure it's not. It
tastes like burning.
Fire. Would be my guess. I haven't tried yet.
Cider oil.
It smells, it does, it smells great.
Essence of lockjaw.
Oh,
apt
yeah.
Description. That would make a great mouthwash if you're not into mint.
Can I try these? That'll kill it.
I think that's the new. That's the new. One's the old.
Is the old more mellowed out or less mellowed out?
I think it's going to be more.
I like this better than I liked the grandma drink. I was going to say I like it more than grandma, but I love my grandma.
It's going to be.
I like it more than the previous one that smells like Ray's grandma.
I like the.
This is going to be more whiskey-y.
Yeah, the age one reminds me of whiskey.
Yeah. I'm actually getting maybe I got them mixed up, but I feel like the new one is less harsh.
I like the aged one.
It's smooth, huh?
Yeah.
Agreed.
It's more complex, for sure.
It has that oaky characteristic that whiskey has.
Yeah.
It really reminds me of whiskey. And it's brandy. That's weird.
There are 6 pounds of apples in this bottle.
Wow.
It says there's the 6 on it.
I smell it. I smell it. I just don't really taste the apple.
So if I drink a shot of this, can I avoid going to the doctor?
Even if you do go, there will be nothing they could do for you.
You can drink the whole bottle over the course of a week.
Oh, only 6? There's
6. Oh, no. Sorry, there's 6 pounds. Oh, wait.
6 pounds.
Yeah, 6 pounds. Okay,
so it'd be very large apples.
Yeah.
Very large.
The aged Laird's is 7.5 years old.
Yeah, it's old.
This one is straight out of Jack.
Straight out of Jack.
this is squeezed
this is
out.
Still smoother, I would say, than like a cheap whiskey.
Yeah, it is.
What? I don't know. Which cheap whiskey?
I don't like when you go when you like you're in college and you just don't care and you want to show off and you go to the bar and you're like, give me some whiskey, and you don't even clarify which one you want.
Would you characterize this as brandy? Does it give you that sense?
Really? Not me.
No, not me. Not me either.
It's less musty than a lot of brandies we've tried.
I guess the H one's a little more like brandy. I don't know. It's...
Oh, hey.
This is a giant drink. 2 ounces of rum, 2 ounces of brandy. That's 4 ounces. Now, none of those things are strong. That Applejack is real weak. And your flavored fruity brandies aren't going to be that strong either. So it's not that strong of a drink. There's still 4 ounces of liquor in there. About a full ounce of lemon. About a half ounce of simple syrup. That's what they called for. Usually you're a little bit more even with that. But I'm thinking that the liquors are so sweet that that's probably why they did that. So it seems to be balanced pretty well. A little bit of soda water just to give it a little bit more life and a little bit more air. It's a little rare when you've got soda water and egg white in a drink because the egg white kind of will do the same thing. Especially to put soda water after you serve it too is a little rare because you break up what the egg white has done. Having said that, it still settles nice. It's really good. I'd imagine with 4 ounces per drink that it's strong enough. So I'm going to leave you guys to your devices and say enjoy.
Thank you.
It's that typical brown color that we get.
I know, that typical flesh Damn. Color.
That's racist.
She's been told.
I know. I didn't make this drink.
So we've got like Applejack and peach stuff.
And eggs.
And eggs, yes. It smells very frou-frou.
Fluffy.
The lemon can only make it better at this point.
It smells fluffy.
I bet it has a good mouthfeel.
Yeah, my mouth feels great.
How is that egg yummy. Combining with the seltzer? Are you noticing either?
I don't feel like I noticed the seltzer really.
There's no mouthfeel because there's no yolk in it, but it's kind of light to drink. It's yummy.
It's delicious.
And it's sour. The sour is holding on. It's just kind of sitting in my mouth.
It smells like candy.
It does. And it tastes good up front, and then it mellows out to sour.
Man, this tastes so much better than that Applejack.
Yeah. I think this drink is more than the sum of its parts.
I like it.
I like the Applejack better.
You're not a sweet cocktail person.
I mean, I'm very sweet.
But you don't like the sweet. But you're sweet enough.
Okay, this is pretty sweet.
But like, sit and taste the sour that lingers afterwards.
There's only a little bit of sour.
I think it could go for more sour.
Oh, it could. Definitely.
I think that would only improve.
But like, I'm still tasting sour, and I,
really?
Yeah.
This it's needs like a crushed up lemon heads rim.
Serve it in a martini glass, and yeah.
Or at least a twist of lemon garnish. Something. Let's get those lemon oils in there.
I think it doesn't need anything. I like this drink. It's complex. It is sweet, but it has complexity to it. If you hold it in your mouth, you can get different layers.
What do you think of the egg on it?
The egg is a nice thickener.
It kind of does taste like lemon heads a little bit, which I'm kind of down with. I like that.
It's good, man. And it's weird because I don't know whoever decided to put egg in this, but every drink that we've tried with eggs in it, I like it.
Even the coffee cocktail?
I didn't like the coffee one? I'll have to go back.
God, that one made me want
That
to
one had the whole egg, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
You struggled with that because of the texture.
Oh, God, it was awful.
The taste was good, though, if I recall.
But there's no coffee in that one.
No, it was... It was Dubonnet Rouge and...
Puke.
I want to try this drink without the grandma brandy.
Just Applejack and egg?
And lemon and sugar.
I mean that...
I think the brandy adds a little something extra.
Yeah, must.
I don't know. Would it be? I don't know if it'd be as sour though, because the peach kind of brings that front, you know, kind of brightness to the sour.
I feel like the peach. Wait, where is the sour coming? Well, it's coming from the lemon.
Yeah, there's a lot
like,
of lemon.
Like the booze is all sweet.
If you took the peach out, you'd have to add something in to round it out a little bit more. Something with
More lemon.
Something with complexity. If not, if you're not into the mustiness, the old fruit flavor.
I like how about some vermouth?
I don't want it to go too light. I don't know if I'd like it if it was floral.
You know what? The peach brandy brings in the fruit. Without that, it's just another harsh cocktail, I think.
I think it would be way too easy to drink if you were missing one of the ingredients.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that assessment.
You would not sip it, you would gulp it.
Yeah, it's a little special right now.
Yeah.
It feels like a special drink right now. If you took out that brandy, it would be a little...
It would be a shooter?
It would be an old-fashioned, is what it would be.
Yeah.
I think the egg does the same thing. It slows you down a little bit so you can actually taste everything.
It aerates it. You could not make this into a punch. That punch would be really gross. Can you imagine making a punch with egg white and soda water? No, that would not be good. I think that the texture would just break down.
Would the top just be like a... like an ectoplasm?
Yeah. Not good.
You could, like, do the creme brulee torch over it and create an omelet. A floating omelet.
Well, it would be more like a
egg white omelet.
Or, no, I'm thinking of a...
grape?
Meringue.
Egg clouds. Have you had those?
No.
You basically separate the whites and the yolks, and you beat the whites into stiff peaks without sugar. And then you put the yolks in the center and you bake it until the tops are lightly browned and the yolk is cooked just enough, and then you eat it. It's an egg cloud.
Is that breakfast or dessert?
Yes. It's usually savory, but you could make it sweet if you wanted to.
Okay.
So I've tried the Applejack again after trying this drink.
Oh, yeah.
And the drink is definitely smoother upon revisiting the Applejack. Woo! It's certainly a way to make the Applejack more palatable.
A bit of your American heritage right here. Just recently on NPR, there was a guy who was on talking about Johnny Appleseed and just how crazy he was.
Spreading his seed.
Yeah, spreading his seed. Apparently, he actually did wear a pot on his head.
Did he suffer like a head injury?
No, he was apparently a very crafty merchant. He used to travel the rivers and plant trees because he would harvest them, and then he had a distillation operation going on.
Wearing a pot on your head is excellent branding.
I know. It's going to stand out. People are going to notice you. You're going to be that crazy guy.
Is that the brand? The brand is Crazy Guy?
Johnny Appleseed.
If you can sell mattresses, you can sell apples.
I forgot about that.
Apples are from Kazakhstan, right?
That I don't know.
So the seed of the steppes gets around. Not only Genghis Khan, but apples.
Huh. I didn't realize that.
I know.
I would have thought that there were like many different kinds, and some of them were more edible than others. And...
at like the turn of the century, a bunch of farmers would order orchard trees, not only because they produce fruit, but because they would block the winds on like the really windy prairies from the rest of their fields. So you'd order a bunch of trees basically as protection from the wind for your crops, and then also if they bore fruit, that was great.
It's my understanding that there aren't really a lot of different species of apples, that they're all just, the apple varieties that we know are all just characteristics of certain individuals that we then asexually reproduce.
Oh, okay.
Is that like dogs then?
No, it's like weed. I mean, I don't know anything about that. Sorry.
If you breed, or if you let a Granny Smith tree pollinate itself, or another Granny Smith tree, you will not get a Granny Smith tree out of it. You'll get something different. They're like people in that way.
Huh, okay.
You know why pumpkins are pollinating?
Well, no, you have to try really hard.
Flexible helps.
Yeah. That was the right comment
So would you all agree this was delicious and sour?
Yes. Absolutely.
I like Applejack now.
Once again, Nicole finds an ingredient that she can cozy up to.
What would you say your rate is for success on these cocktails?
Actually pretty high. Like, probably, like, 75 to 80%.
Really?
Well, I'd have to listen back a little bit. But a lot of the cocktails that are unpopular with the rest of the group, I'll still enjoy.
I know.
But I might not speak up about it.
It's that peer pressure. It's like, you know, make fun of her. Okay, delicious and sour. The only William, it's a hit. I kind of want to, like go through his book.
Have we had more of his drinks?
No. No.
I'm interested now.
His, I mean, as you recall, he had things, like, measured by tenths.
Yeah, just make 10 times the amount.
This is the man for punches. This sounds like my kind of guy.
And this... Thus the flowing bowl.
Except for, yes. That's what I was thinking, exactly. Right. He's talking about measuring intent.
The whole flowing bowl thing.
He wants to make punches.
That was
rich. The delicious sour, I do not think would translate well into a punch.
And that's why it's in the cocktail book.
No. Yeah. Once you start adding eggs, a punch is not... Yeah, I don't want to, like... Even if you're just using egg white, I can't imagine making, like, a large vat
you
of something.
You can fry it in a curtain.
What you could do instead is you could replace the egg with another thickening agent. You'd have to experiment to get the right amount, but like agar or something like that.
You could use, what's that, that one ingredient that's supposedly a thickener, the liquidy, like algae?
Gelatin?
No, we had it in a cocktail that added a bunch, it was the mouthfeel episode.
It was the gum syrup.
Yes.
Yes.
That was very popular back
use
then.
That.
The seltzer would give it fizz still, and you'd have the thickness without the eggs.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay,
we can do that.
And you can just go ahead and sweeten the gum syrup, too.
Yeah.
And that's makes a nice, slick, simple syrup.
Yeah.
Where there's a will, there's a punch.
Well, we've tried the cocktail. It's delicious. It's sour. There's nothing more to be said. I think we're done.
Bye.
Everybody, listen to the show. Go on iTunes and rate it. See us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, everything. We're just everywhere.
Bye, Scott.
Bye, Scott. Until next time, everyone. Bye now. Thank you.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content, our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Ratajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss. The Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground. Dan Cruz for art direction and editing. And Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive. Become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and, as it happens, updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.